Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello there, it's Gina Gardner here, and I'm very, very pleased to see you today on the show and happy to welcome Jamie Keeling. Now, I met Jamie a little while ago and I was blown away by his story, and I thought it would be one that would be really valuable to you. I'm going to read you his bio because it's pretty impressive and I don't want to miss any of the juiciness of it. Jamie Keeling specialises in delivering strategic turnaround and operational performance consultancy to service businesses through improved financial management, business systematization, and guiding culture change to deliver improved operational excellence, profitability, and sustainable revenue growth. He's the founder of the Construction Business Mastermind, the Bulletproof Mini Mastermind Series, and the revolutionary Bulletproof App. Outside of business, he loves climbing mountains, training in Taekwondo, and pushing the limits of his own capabilities to inspire those around him to be the best they can be. He loves his family, and being present for my children is one of his highest values, alongside leading by example, to help them realise their full potential and to become exceptional human beings in their own right. Jamie, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'd be really grateful if you could share your journey with our listeners.
Thank you, Gina. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on the show. It was a bit of a funny one for me in that I'm not the typical success story. When I was in school, I did okay, but I was bullied. I'd never thrown a punch in my life. I'd call myself a pacifist. And I just kind of meandered through doing quite well at the things that I had to do without really trying very hard. And I was relatively academic, and as I said, I did quite well at school. But I ended up dropping out of college before I sat my AS exams because I lost all faith in the system, and I didn't want to go to university. I couldn't see the point, and I was itching to get out there and start living life and earning some money and building a life for myself. So as I said, I dropped out of college, and basically I wanted to be a rock star. So I spent years traveling up and down the country and some time in Europe touring with the band. And those were great experiences, but unfortunately never resulted in earning enough money whereby we could do that for a living. I worked as a studio engineer for a certain time as well. But things really took a turn for me in 2013. And the catalyst for that was somebody posted a Facebook video, a Bruce Lee video to my Facebook wall. I don't know who the hell it was. I need to go and find out because I tell this story so often. And whoever it was is responsible for some massive, massive shifts in my life. But nonetheless, this video was the one, it was about 3 or 4 minutes long, and he's doing the one-inch punch and lighting matchsticks on fire in midair with his nunchucks and just doing all of this crazy stuff. And I don't know what it was about where I was at and my mindset and that video hitting me in that moment at that point in time. But it inspired me to move. It inspired me to do more and be more than I had presently been. And so off the back of seeing that video, I decided, you know what? Enough of the excuses, enough of I haven't got the time, I haven't got the money, all the usual stuff that people tell themselves that holds them back. And I went out and I decided to pick a martial art. I picked a Taekwondo in the end after doing some research because punching and kicking looked fun. Even though I was a pacifist and bullied at school, it just looked like a kind of a cool thing to be able to do. And who doesn't want to be Bruce Lee, right? So I found the Taekwondo school, which I thought was the closest to me, which was in Mold. It's about a 45-minute drive from me. I live in Wales, so there's not a lot around here. And I remember it like it was yesterday, phoning up my instructor to be and asking if I could go along to his Sunday class. And he said, yes, we'd love to have you. Please come along. Just don't come this Sunday because we're all at the World Championships. And I'm thinking at this point, like, oh my goodness, like, what have I got myself into here? The World Championships. I couldn't think of anything worse at this point in my life. But nonetheless, I convinced myself to go anyway and said, well, look, I'm not going to spar, fight. I'm not going to go to competitions and do all that side of it. It was a way for me to just ease myself in a way that I could get comfortable with it and find my feet first. And so I went along to that first class and took to it like a duck to water. I don't know what it was about it, but I just became obsessed, really healthily obsessed with something that ended up changing my life in so many ways. And to the point where that night we spent an hour in the class, drove home, and then I spent the next 3 hours in my living room going over all of the stuff that we'd learned in that class. And over the next 2 months, my classmates would say to me, my goodness, you're a natural at this. You're built for it. Like you just can do it. And the funny thing about that is that all they saw over the first couple of months was me turning up once a week for 1 hour at one class. And they thought that just from that, I was improving and getting so, so good at this martial art because I was just a natural. I'm not a natural at anything. The reason I got so good was literally because it wasn't just that first night when I went home and spent 3 hours in my living room going over the moves. Every night I would go home. Every night I would spend time in my living room, go hours and hours going over the patterns, the moves, the form, the technique. And that was why I managed to get so good so quickly, to the point where within 2 months I was that good that my fellow classmates had convinced me to grade and to go down to Cardiff in South Wales to compete in my first ever martial arts competition. And I was absolutely breaking it. You know, this, I was, as I said, bullied at school and never thrown a punch in my life. And if you'd have told me at that point where I would be now with all of my medals and all of my trophies, I would have laughed because it was just ridiculous at that point in time. Nonetheless, I trusted in my colleagues and I fed off my love for the sport and I went down and I competed. And to my amazement, I walked away from that competition with not one, but two gold medals. Like, I'd never won anything in my life. And yet here I was fighting and winning. It was just bizarre, absolutely bizarre. And one of the medals I won for my patterns in so my technical ability, and the other I won by default, because I was the only middleweight to turn up for the middleweight division, for the fighting, for the sparring. And the guy came over to me and said, well, look, you're the only one. You win. So here's your medal. But it felt like cheating to me. And so I decided that I was going to fight anyway, but I would go up a division and fight in the heavyweights. And I got knocked out in the first fight, so I didn't win any fights at all. But it was an amazing feeling to be proved wrong. And that was such a pivotal turning point for me because it was the first point in my life really where I realized that I'd been so wrong about my abilities, so wrong about what was possible. And it inspired me from then on to think, well, what else was I wrong about? What else is there that I think I cannot do? That actually, if I put some time in, put some work in, I can do it. I can achieve something. And so from that point on, I decided I was going to seek out those things. I was going to go and find the things that I thought were impossible or that I thought were beyond my reach. And I was going to damn well try anyway, because why not? What did I have to lose? Yeah. And that's been the mantra for my life ever since.
I'd like to just for a moment, and it's amazing, and I think this, it's so rich, there's so many things that we could talk about here. But if I may, I'd like to go back to that first night where you'd been to the class for an hour. If you take your mind back to that first night, do you have any sense of what was it that made the difference? What is it that actually connected with you in that moment?
I loved the community of it. I loved the possibility that I could be more than I thought I was. Mm-hmm. Stepping into that in that first class. And there'd already been a massive shift in me. For some reason, somehow, seeing that video and making the move to go out and just creating momentum by going to the class in the first place, by making that decision, I think that was a big part of it. But the people in that class, now I did martial arts when I was 12 years old. So this is when I was about 25. I did martial arts, I did judo when I was 12 and had a horrible experience. I remember my mum and dad taking me to this cold village hall somewhere with these horrible children and a teacher who really didn't care. And again, it was a rinse and repeat of what I'd experienced at school. And I went to this class and we basically just got bullied by these, me and my brother, we got bullied by these girls nonetheless. And as a boy, a 12-year-old boy, that's quite a big deal.
Difficult, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just a horrible experience. So there was that in the back of my mind as well of, are people just going to take advantage? Am I going to get bullied again? And all of these fears. But just conquering those fears and making the decision, going to the class, and then arriving there and finding, I'll never forget the people that I've worked with over the years in those sessions, the instructors, the other black belts, everybody from white belt upwards, the courtesy, the respect, the amount they care and the amount they give to try and help everybody in the room, the selflessness. That for me was just like, this is what being a human being is all about. And my friends and my family, they didn't understand why I wanted to go and pay money to stand in a room and get kicked and punched in the end, six times a week I was training. But they didn't get it. They thought it was all about violence. It was about hitting and kicking and punching. I didn't have anything to do with that stuff. It was about learning self-respect, learning my capabilities and my limits and how to push through those. But more importantly, it was about learning who I am when my back's up against the wall. Because up until that point, I'd had an easy childhood compared to a lot of people. But still with the bullying and other things that I've been through, I was never the popular kid at school. I'd always been very much alone. And so to be part of a community like that, where they literally welcomed me with open arms and allowed me the space and freedom to fail and to get punched and kicked and knocked to the ground and then to reach out and help me back up again. It was just an overwhelmingly wonderful, satisfying, fulfilling experience. And I wanted more. I just wanted to be the best I could be. And that was what drove me to spend the time that I spent, not just at home, but even when I was at work in my business, I was standing in parallel ready stance when I was speaking to people. I was doing 10 press-ups every time I went to the toilet. It really did become a way of life. And I think that's the key for me, is that everything that I've done that I've been successful in has become a way of life. It's consumed every part of me, not in a negative way, but a really positive way. People can talk about obsession as if it's a negative thing, and it can be if it's used in the wrong ways. But for me, I got obsessed about the right things in the right ways, and that massively improved my physical health, my mental health, my spirituality, the way I view myself and people, and just to understand my place in the world so much better. And I used to have this recurring nightmare before I started Taekwondo. For years and years and years, I'd had this nightmare again and again and again. And it basically revolved around being somewhere in this nightmare and having a group of people jump me or attack me or try and knife me, or it was some form of attack. And every time I would be defenseless, completely defenseless. I'd try and scream and no sound would come out. I'd try and move my arms and fight back, but my arms wouldn't move. And it was petrifying. It was absolutely petrifying. And I started Taekwondo, and as soon as I had that first lesson, I've never had that nightmare again.
There's a lot in this, and I'd just like to unpick a few things, if I may. What strikes me is, first and foremost, is the shift was from beliefs which were entirely limiting. I don't trust other people because they're a threat to me, and for obvious reasons, you've been bullied and so on. But you didn't believe in you. And what strikes me as listening to you is that the group of people believed in you very quickly. and you started to believe in yourself. And those beliefs went from limiting you and holding you back to recognizing that when you stepped into your genuine power, that the opportunities were limitless. And I think for people who are listening to this, one of the things I hope you will do is to recognize that Jamie's story and my story and most people's story, you know, those who are successful, start from a place where you don't always have all the answers and you don't always have all that sense of self-belief. But once you do, the door of possibilities opens. And, you know, you offer a very powerful story about, yeah, you took action. And I think so many people who stay in victim mode don't take action. They stay stuck. And, you know, watching that film, you know, I don't believe in coincidence. Whoever sent you that film, it was meant to happen. But you could have easily said, nice film, and done nothing. But you took action. And then when you went to the class, you practiced and you established a way of being because you consistently took action. You know, who's the famous golfer who had it said to him, you know, aren't you lucky that you won the game? And he said, you know, isn't it strange? The more I practice and the more I work at it, the luckier I become.
Yes.
And I think that's true for all of us. What I'd be really interested in, Jamie, is that here you are, you are a man who believes in yourself, that the fear of being attacked, whether that's physical or just not belonging, is now very much in the background from what you say. How did you utilize this in terms of becoming the successful businessman you are, the successful family man you are? How did you utilize that new vision of yourself?
That's a great question. And I think what I'd like to point out is that actually that self-doubt is still very much there. I still hold a lot of fears. I've learned to move through them. I've learned to just, that became my obsession. When I won those medals, I was just like, well, what else am I wrong about? And it was the fear. It was moving towards the fear. If I hadn't moved towards the fear, when I saw the video, when I went to the class, when I was invited to go and do the first competition, my first grading, it was my willingness to fail, my willingness to be humiliated, my willingness to be the white belt, you know, to go into something and not know what the hell I was doing. And you know, when you go into martial arts as a white belt and you're trying to learn these patterns and these katas, and it's like your arms and legs, you look like an octopus on a drunk octopus or something. You're looking at these black belts, you just look so sharp and so perfected, and then you're there just like muddling through it somehow. And I think that's a great analogy for most things in life, is that you always start something new as the white belt. You always start not knowing what the hell that you're doing. And it's such an intrinsic part of getting anywhere, making a success of anything, is being prepared to be the worst first and then just working at it. But knowing that that is an intrinsic part of the process. So for me, it's a big part of it is, like, I still have self-doubts. I still have things that are fears for me, for my family, my kids, my business. But I tend to approach it more logically because I've been there before, and I know that when I'm scared, when I'm standing across the ring from a 6'7" dude who's built like a brick house, I know that it's about just going straight through it. Now, I'll tell you a story. I was the culmination of my Taekwondo career was when I competed and fought in the World Championships. And the medal I won, the world championship medal I won, was in the team event. So there was a team of three of us fighting teams of three on the other side. And one of the teams we fought, there was a guy in that team who's 6'7". He's an XR Airborne Forces trooper. So this guy, he's been through the mill, and yeah, he's tough as nails. And he's like, I'm tall, I'm 6'3", but he's tall.
Yeah.
And this guy's my best mate now. I love this guy to pieces. We got the mountains together. We do all sorts together. We have the best conversations. But the reason I'm telling the story is because I stepped up into the ring to fight, and he was across, and I didn't really know him that well at this point. So I'm looking across the ring at this guy who's tall, built, he's solid, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, like, this guy could smash me. Like, I'm 4 years into my Taekwondo career at this point, and I'm stepping into the ring at the World Championships from this guy who was menacing as hell, and I was scared. I've been scared every single fight, but I was scared. I was like, this guy is going to nail me. But I made the decision in that moment that, A, I was going in anyway. I was going to fight. There was no backing down. There was no turning around and running away. And secondly, I decided, right, as soon as the bell goes, as soon as his hand comes up and it's go time, I'm going to lift up my leg and I'm going to kick him straight in the midst. I'm just going to go straight towards him like a freight train. He's not going to know what's hit him, and I'm just going to get him in the midsection, boom. And as soon as his hand went up, as soon as the bell rung, my foot came up, I hopped towards him, and boom, I got him in the stomach. And no one had ever done that to him before.
No.
Because of his stature, because of how big and how tall he is, no one had had the guts to just go straight through him. And I think that's such a great analogy for everything that you fear in life. You know, that guy, Kevin, he's my best mate, but in that moment, he was my biggest fear. Mm-hmm. And my solution was, as it has been ever since, to pick up my foot and go straight through it. Now, it's not to say that you're going to win every time. It's not to say that every time it's going to work, but you've got no other choice. You know, you can't turn around and back away. You can't run, because you learn nothing. Even if that hadn't have worked and he'd have got me then, and believe me, he got me in subsequent competitions and subsequent matches.
You can only use that tactic as total surprise once, can't you?
Well, yeah, as it happens, I got him twice in that same match. So I did it once and then I did it again. And I remember him saying to me afterwards, that was really good. No one's ever done that to me before, but it won't happen again. And he was right. It didn't happen again. He's a phenomenal guy and a great fighter. I've got so much respect for him. It's a great analogy.
I was reading only last week, I'd done a lot of research about very successful people. And there was a guy, I have to say I'm terrible with names, I've forgotten his name, but he said that he is a very successful people, and he'd also studied others, that they have no lack of fear, that they fear not the consequences of not giving things a go, of not trying their best, because living with themselves when they haven't tried, when they have left things in case they might fail, was far worse than dealing with the consequences of failing, because that was an opportunity to learn. And yeah. I think there's so much richness in that. You know, new things are uncomfortable, they are scary, but ultimately it's in part because they're unfamiliar. And once you start to do things, you get better at it. The more you do it, the more it becomes familiar, the more it becomes something that's second nature. And I think you've given us so much richness in your story so far, and also in that particular example of how when we are fearful of something, that going out there, going for the midriff, going out there and being prepared to stand up and be counted, I think is a really strong metaphor for life.
I agree. And what I would add to that is that I've been in lots of fights in the ring, legitimate fights. Yeah. I've been happier, more fulfilled with fights that I've lost where I felt that I've left everything in the ring than I have been in fights that I've won where I felt that I sat back and didn't give my all. I've walked away with medals and not been happy with my performance because I knew I could have been so much better. Whereas I've walked away battered and bruised with no medals, having lost the fight, but I'm cool with that because, do you know what? I left everything in the ring.
Yeah.
Like it's not about the medal. And this was another big lesson for me, and it really transformed my performance in competitions, was not being attached to the outcome, but enjoying and focusing on the process. Now, it's a dichotomy because if there's no outcome, if there's nothing to win, then what's the goal driving you forward, inspiring you? You have to have that. Like the pull of the world championship gold medal. You can probably see it up in the background here.
I can indeed. Very impressive.
The pull of that, the inspiration, the motivation to succeed as a result of that was immense. However, becoming too attached to that in the process of the fight took my eye off the ball, and it adversely would affect my performance. Yes. And so my best fights were when I was completely detached from the outcome and I was completely in the moment, completely in flow. And it was almost like watching myself fight. It was almost like knowing what was coming and doing this weird spiritual dance. And I can't really explain it. You know, for other people who've experienced it in various different sports or activities, they'll know what I'm talking about. But that's, I think, another important key distinction for the listeners of the show is that you have to have the goal to drive you forward. You have to have a vision to motivate you and inspire you. But like, you're changing all of the time. Every day you experience new things and you grow and you evolve and you change. So every day, what you want, you know, we've all got that idea of the ideal person that we'd like to be in 5 or 10 or 20 years. And that's great. You need that to drive you forward and to inspire you. But you need to understand also that you're never going to get there, because that ideal version of you is always changing. So it will never, you'll never get there. It will never be.
Yeah.
But you need it all the same. So have that vision and that goal to drive you forward, but focus on being the best you can be in the process in the moment as well.
That's a brilliant message. Thank you very much. So who do you work with and how can people contact you?
So I work with multiple different types of businesses. My speciality, I spent years in construction of growing my family's business to multiple seven figures, and that's a whole other story and lessons in that in and of itself. So my speciality is working with construction business owners, hence the Construction Business Mastermind, which I launched this year. I also do one-to-one with them, so that helping them really grow from six figures up to seven figures is where my sweet spot lies. But I've also recently launched my Bulletproof Mini Mastermind series, which is aimed at startups and early stage businesses, to give them the access to business advice and support that I feel at the moment is priced out of the market. I've got a bee in my bonnet, basically, about a lot of these trainers and mentors and coaches who are charging lots and lots of money for products and services that aren't delivering results. And in the process, getting people who are already vulnerable into high amounts of debt, paying for these services on credit cards. And for the people who I'm targeting with the Bulletproof Mini Mastermind, they barely got, you know, they're a lot of them are mums, work at home mums. They're working 2 or 3 days a week around the kids. They don't have big budgets to spend on mentors and coaches and these big training programs. So that's a really one that's close to my heart, because it's £60 a month. We get together groups of 10 all across the UK. I've launched Chester and Birmingham so far, and looking to open in Leeds, Manchester, Liverpool, London and Wiltshire, hopefully in the next few months. But it's making business coaching, mentoring and training available and accessible to everybody and the people who need it most, which are those early stage startup businesses just trying to get started, just trying to get some momentum to succeed and give themselves the lives that they want.
So where can they find you?
The best place to find me is on my Bulletproof app. It's my own proprietary app, and the first 1,000 users, I'm at 150 so far, the first 1,000 people to download that app get lifetime access to all of the content, all of the features and all of the tools for free, for life. You can message me directly through there. You can see all of my content, my podcast, my Optimize Me Now podcast. There was a fantastic guest on there the other week. You might know her. And lots and lots of business tools as well. So planning forms, business assessment tools, and lots of things that can help early stage startup and even six and seven figure businesses do business better and be more solid, more stable, and grow profitably.
And that would work anywhere in the English-speaking world, wouldn't it?
Absolutely anywhere, yes.
Lovely. Yep.
So available on Apple and Android. Just head over to the App Store or the Google Play Store, type in Bulletproof. You're looking for the the shiny bee in a bullet hole. You can't miss it.
Brilliant. Well, I'd like to say thank you so much for a great interview. We'll have to have you back for the business part of the journey because we've run out of time. But thank you so much. And it's been a joy speaking to you. Take care. And we'll see you soon. Thanks very much, Jamie.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com. Or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Hello there, and welcome back to today's genuine chat with Rachel Davidson, my good friend, international best-selling author, great novelist, and Gina Gardner, and I'm also a number one international best-selling author. And we, as you know, if you've been listening to our shows, we spend the second half of the show having what we call a genuine chat. And it's a genuine chat about a theme, and we explore it together, and we hope that you'll be thinking about this at home and that you will let us know what you think either through BBS Radio or through the website genuinely-you.com. And you can email me on gina@genuinely-you.com. Now, today's theme is all about kindness. You know, the world would be a very different place, wouldn't it, Rachel, if there was greater kindness. And I think, for me, there's kindness in very two distinct but connected ways. One is being kind to ourselves. And I think we need to start up right up front and talk about there is a huge difference between being kind to oneself and being overindulgent.
Yeah.
And we'll come to that later. And then kindness to others, kindness to the environment, kindness to animals. You know, there's so much cruelty that's going on in the world at every level. And if we could just be kinder to one another, I think the whole vibration of the world would be different and the quality of life for everyone would be different. Because when we are unkind, not only are we being unkind to the person on the receiving end, but that has an impact on ourselves, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So let's start with kindness to others, because I think many people find it easier to be kind to other people or to animals or to the environment than they do to themselves. But I also think that for many people, they're very kind in some areas of their lives, but completely oblivious in others.
Mm.
So what do we mean by being kind? And for me, it's treating other people well. It's having compassion. It's recognizing when somebody needs a helping hand or a listening ear.
Yeah.
It's not about big presence.
Yeah.
For me, it's about actually being present for that person.
Yeah.
It's about treating people in a way that helps them thrive, that helps them flourish. And, you know, if you think about helping the environment, you know, we humans have got a lot to answer for in terms of how unkind we are to the environment. And, you know, I was watching a thing on the news this morning, mm-hmm. and there was a guy there with a dog that he'd rescued from the meat trade.
Right. You know, yeah.
As a human race, we have a terrible track record in terms of being kind to animals and treating them well.
Hmm.
We have an even worse track record when it comes to how we treat one another.
Yeah. I was watching a video by Professor Jordan Peterson,
yep.
Who some of your listeners may know as the 12 Rules for Life author. And he's quite controversial, actually, I think, in a lot of the media in the States because of his views on freedom of speech, which he advocates for, by the way, not against. But he was talking about how knowing your... sorry, got a frog in my throat. That's not being very kind to me. He was talking about how knowing and accepting that human beings have a shadow side, so the Jungian theories around that, how important it was to acknowledge this and to know this. And during this lecture, he talked about how human beings are the most vicious of creatures. And I think, you know, if we want to just concentrate on that side for a little bit, I think it's true. I think there is nothing so cruel as a human being. Equally, there is nothing so kind and caring as a human being.
And isn't it interesting that, you know, we see the best and worst of people?
Yeah, we all have that within us. We all do. And, you know, circumstances and choice and education and all of these external factors play a role, but ultimately it's a choice inside.
Absolutely.
And kindness doesn't have, as you've already said, it doesn't have to be big displays. It can just be a gentleness, a choice to stay silent sometimes, yeah. A choice just to breathe through something and not react. I mean, there are a lot of people who will be terribly kind and helpful to the outside world and then come into the sanctuary, and I'd use that word actually on purpose, but the sanctuary of their family, and be very unkind.
And I think it's
like they can, with the people that they so-called love the most, they can relax and be at their base self because they feel safe. And I know this is true of, I think, of my children. I hope it's true of everyone's children. It's not just my pair. I do know that they can be distinctly unkind to me. And it's not like they are deliberately, psychopathically aiming that at me. It's just that I know that outside in the big, bad, dangerous world, they don't feel secure enough to actually be that person out there. So they practice it in here, where it's safe, where they kind of know nothing terrible is going to happen. I mean, Mum might get a bit shouty and ratty at them.
But they know you love them.
But nothing terrible is going to happen. And I think that actually can become a bit of a habit, that you save the worst of yourself for those you love because you get into this complacency.
I think that's absolutely true.
What he used to say in the family, his mantra was, just be kind. That's all he used to say.
I think it's a very good mantra. I also find it fascinating that we think of unkindness, and I've no doubt that many of the people who are watching or listening this will immediately think about physical unkindness.
Mm.
And yet the words that we use can be so destructive, so toxic, not to other people and also to ourselves. I also find it quite interesting that people can be very kind to one group of people, but desperately and terribly unkind to another. I mean, if you look at the things that went on earlier this year when there were riots because of the way in which a man had been treated by the police, uh-huh. and how unkind, I mean, at the most extreme level that is, and how unkind it is to treat people as second-class citizens. But so often that unkindness is both unconscious and also it's by default. It's because we don't actively do something. It's we let the status quo continue.
Well, that was the point around the resurgence in Black Lives Matter, which was, I mean, obviously horror about yet another unfair, unkind killing of police against civilian, but also the fact that too many privileged people, and of course, you know, the race debate says, you know, white privileged, you and I, too many of us stay silent. And although, you know, we don't support it and we don't agree with it and we're as horrified and as worried about what it says about the state of humanity, if we're not speaking out and acting out about it, then are we being complicit? And, you know, this is a very good point, because I think the point about kindness is you have to demonstrate. It's a little bit like love. I mean, it is on the same scale, isn't it, as love? It's an active verb. You have to be kind.
Be
you
can't it.
Say kind. You have no. to be it.
And I think it's, for me, it's about consistency too. Mm. You know, if you're kind to one group within society, or you're kind to people but you're unkind to animals, you know, there is a complete mismatch there.
Yeah.
And for those people who recognise that they're on a spiritual journey and yeah. that want to feel a greater level of consciousness,
yeah.
that can only happen if you are consistently kind. Acknowledge that we all have a shadow side, but also recognise that in the moment we have a choice. Mm. We have a choice to lash out with our words or with our hands, or we have a choice to stay silent or not. Mm. But we have to be in that moment and be conscious of everything we do. And we've said so many times in our conversations, you know, everything we do is a choice.
Yeah.
You know, whether we're talking about our thoughts, our words, our deeds, and every choice has consequences. And not actively making a choice is still a choice. And often they have the most far-reaching outcomes. And I think, you know, we are now well into the 21st century. We're a fifth of the way into the 21st century. And I'm saddened that as a race, we have not evolved in terms of kindness further on.
No.
and
that's mainly, I think, because a lot of people believe in scarcity.
Yes.
Which is just another way of saying a lot of people are fearful. And to be kind is an active gift. So by definition, you are taking energy and resources and you are placing it out there. And people who don't feel able to be kind to themselves or to others,
yes,
generally speaking, are operating from a fear that, well, you know, they might not have enough, and it's dog eat dog, which, by the way, never happens in nature. And I think that quote is totally misquoted from the Bible, isn't it? But you know, we have this sort of, oh, it's dog eat dog, and there's competition. And if you live within that as your reality, then, yeah, you're going to find it hard to be kind to people when
you're constantly in defence mechanism. And, you know, the old saying that attack is the best form of defence, I think is very true.
Yeah.
That's a really nice segue for me, because I think one of the reasons that people are unkind is that they're trying in some way to make themselves feel better, more important. And, you know, if you don't feel enough, and I think that's at the heart of most people's unkindness to themselves, that they don't feel worthy of that kindness, that then spills out. Now, some people overcompensate by being very kind to everybody else and really unkind to themselves.
Yeah.
But others, that unkindness becomes much more spread. And I know of people who, you know, find it very difficult to be kind to other people, themselves included, but go out of their way to help animals, for example. But I think, you know, if you are kind to yourself, that means, first of all, that you have to appreciate and love who you are. So recognize that you are enough. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, you put yourself in a place of coming from love and connection rather than from fear and division.
Yeah.
And kindness, and as I said right at the beginning, you know, people, you know, I'll just have another cake, I'm being kind to myself, or I'll just go and buy myself another dress or another handbag. That's not kindness. Kindness is it's looking after yourself, it's talking to yourself in a way which is empowering. And it's interesting, you know, I work with lots of clients, as you know, and sometimes they talk about other people have used unkind words to them.
Mm.
But when you start to explore it, they're nothing in comparison to the unkind words that they use to themselves.
I was having this conversation with my daughter, who was having a fat day. And everything
up her.
Everything. We were out on the dog walk doing our allotted exercise, and everything was wrong with her life. You know, nothing she could see. And I said to her, "Would you say these things about your friend's life, even if they were absolutely true? Would you boldly say, yeah, you're ugly, you're fat, you're useless, you're this, you know, all of these things?" And she said,
"But of course, that wouldn't be true. That would be a perception."
Yeah, but, you know, would you take this perception and opinion and dump it on your friend and then shrug and say, I'm just being truthful? Would you do that? And she said, no. She's annoyed because she knows where I'm going. And I said, why do you say it to yourself then? Why is it okay to call yourself all those things? I mean, I totally get it that you're in that sort of, life's not great. I am upset about certain things. I'm dissatisfied with that. But why beat yourself with it? Why not just say, I've got this feeling because I am dissatisfied with that, and I perhaps could do something with this, but today's just going to be one of those low days because they come along, and so I'm just going to rest and be kind to myself. And every time I hear myself saying you're fat and you're useless, I'm just going to say no, go away. So you would do that with a friend, wouldn't you? A friend who came around and said, I'm fat and I'm useless. You would be like, no, you're not. Come on, let's just be nice.
You'd also say, but they're saying you're useless, but look at what you can do. Look at what you have done. Look at how you are. Because whatever we say about ourselves, we then look for evidence to support it.
Yeah.
And of course, we perceive things based on the way in which we're feeling and our thoughts at the time. Mm. So everything becomes skewed. And if you're going to skew things, you might as well skew things in a constructive and positive way, mightn't you?
Yep, it's just thoughts cutting across the sky of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, as you know, one of the techniques that I find works so well is to become your own best friend.
Yeah.
Think about how you treat a really valued friend. And of course, if they did something that was wrong, you didn't like, you'd tell them. But the chances are you'd tell them in a kind way, and that you would tell them, but you wouldn't keep on and on and on and on and on. And you know, I've had clients where that voice in their head telling them they're useless started when they were probably 6 or 7. And they might be 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 now. And that voice is still governing their lives.
Mm.
When I ask them to sit down and write for me all of the things that they can do, that they have done.
Mm.
And one of the things that I often ask them to do is to ask, you know, a group of people across the colleagues and friends and family, you know, what is it that they think of when they think of that person? and the most amazing things come forward. Mm. And so you start to redress the balance of, I feel useless, I feel dreadful, I can't do this, to actually recognizing, yeah, there are things that we could do better. Mm. There may be things that we don't particularly like in terms of our body, or things that we have done. But you've got absolute choice about what you're going to do now and in the future. And if there are things you can put right, if you don't like your body because you're overweight, then you do have a choice about what you put in your mouth and how much exercise you take. Mm-hmm. If you're short and you want to be tall, there's nothing you can do about that. But ultimately, you can choose to change the way in which you react. And whatever we have, we always want to be something different. You know, I was very tall by the age of 10. I was certainly the tallest person in my year group at school. And I always wanted to be little and petite. Mm. Now, that was never going to happen. But I have friends who are little and petite who always wanted to be tall. Mm. You know, if you've got curly hair, you want straight. If you want, you know, whatever it is, there is the potential for us to want it to be something else. Mm. Instead of recognizing that actually we're an amazing piece of kit, aren't we? You think of the body as a machine, how miraculous it is.
Yeah.
And to start appreciating that. And you know, my brother used to have a horrible nickname for me, which was Thunder Thighs. And I was always very, very upset about it. But I recognized that, particularly when I wasn't able to walk, I'd have given anything for them to work.
Yeah.
And I started to appreciate them in a very, very different way.
Yes.
So, yeah. You know,
that is one of the things around being kind, is a level of acceptance and a willingness to forgive.
Yes. I think, you know, many of the beliefs that we hold about other groups of people, about the animal world, about the world in general, are conditioning. So things that we've heard from parents or our friends of the family or of the people we spend time with.
Yeah.
And I would say to anybody that's listening to this, question it. Mm. Because people say it doesn't make it true.
No.
Because you've always done it in the past doesn't mean that it has to be your present and your future.
Mm.
You have a choice.
Yeah.
And ultimately, as we move forward, I'd like to think that all of us are going to be kinder to ourselves, to others, to animals, to the environment, because then we have a future that is so much brighter than the past has been.
And a present, actually, that feels good.
Yeah. Because when you do feel kind, and I would really urge, you know, do some random acts of kindness. Now, random acts of kindness are where you expect no response as a result. You're not doing it because you want people to say, aren't you wonderful? Mm. You're not doing it to make you feel better. You're not expecting thanks or reciprocal arrangements. I mean, so many people get into bartering. Mm. I'll do this for you if you did this for me. Mm. And for many people, love is not unconditional. It is about, you know, making these business agreements almost. Mm. But random acts of kindness are unconditional. Mm. And, you know, I'll give you an example. I mean, they don't have to cost a lot of money. And I think lots of people think that that's the case. Mm. If you look at what went on during the pandemic lockdown, particularly in the UK, how many people were kind in a qualitative different way, mm. by just phoning somebody that they knew was a bit lonely,
yeah.
or they were going shopping and checking with the neighbour if they wanted anything.
Yeah.
It didn't cost them anything other than a little bit of thought. Mm. And I think that if we were able to expand that, you know, as you go out into the world each day, to choose to do a random act of kindness, and it could be, you know, the traffic's heavy and you let somebody into the traffic.
Yeah.
Or you pay for somebody's coffee when you're in the coffee shop and you pay for the person behind you. It could simply be that you took the time to listen to someone. I mean, truly, truly listen, to hold the space for them.
Yeah.
But I was involved in the Tony Robinson Christmas Brigade, where people are involved in fundraising all through the year, and then the week before Christmas, get together, and all the wherewithal for a Christmas dinner is there.
Yeah.
And you make up parcels with a message in saying, with love, and then you get to deliver them. And these people were nominated by social services and by churches and mosques and things like that, people who would otherwise not get a Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
And so the atmosphere in the hall when we were putting these baskets together, and they're made very pretty with a bow, and there's crackers and there's some things for the children and so on. And then we were given a list of addresses to go to, and the instructions were very clear. You knock on the door, you make sure someone's in, don't leave it if they're not. As the door opens, you just pass over the parcel and say, wishing you a Merry Christmas, sending this with love, and you walk away. Mm. I can't tell you what an amazing experience that was, as people's faces lit up that somebody had done something for them.
Yeah.
Because they didn't expect people to care. They didn't expect people to think about them.
Yeah.
Now, in many ways, you could say that was a grand gesture, and I suppose it was, but it doesn't have to be on that scale.
No.
It can be on a very small scale, that you notice that somebody enjoys something and that you give them that opportunity.
Mm,
yeah. And for me, probably the biggest gift that you can give people is to hold the space for them.
Yeah.
To really see them.
Yes.
To see beyond the words that they use. If they say, I'm fine, to recognise that they're not. Do you need anything? Nope. To recognise that they do. And to also think about yourself. You know, how are you going to be kind to yourself? What are you going to do today for you and every day? And it's not about buying stuff, and it's not about feeding your face. It's about feeding your soul.
Yeah.
So whether it's you take time to notice nature, or you take a bit of attention in terms of looking after your body, or some exercise, or an opportunity to laugh, I would say to you, please make the opportunity to be kind to yourself. Because in doing so, it fills you up, so you have more resources that you can then serve and help other people. Now, we'd love to know what you think. Please, you know, let us know either through BBS Radio, or you can go to the website, genuinely-you.com. Incidentally, you can find all our books there or on Amazon. If you're interested in how you can use kindness in leadership, then go to enlightenedleadership.co, and you can find all about the Enlightened Leadership Program.
Mm-hmm.
It is time to start being kind to yourself and being kind to others. And if you're guilty of being unkind to your family members, you know, take the opportunity today to go and do something kind, even if it's just make a cup of tea or do the washing up.
Yep.
Do something for yourself and do something for other people. We look forward to seeing you on the next show. Remember, you can find us at genuinely-you.com. And if you're interested in having a one-to-one conversation, you can book a slot there. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you on the next show. Bye-bye now.